The Breakfast Club.
Adam White, good morning to you.
Good morning, Daniel. Insta,
the That's gram.
Sort of contemporary sort of stuff, isn't it?
Insta, the gram. Yeah, so the crazy kids love that stuff. They love it.
What would you like to talk about today?
Well, I want to know, how were they?
How were they?
The yearlings you've been inspecting.
Oh, right, yes. Well,
for those playing at home, you've got the quintessential yearling inspection apparel on today. You've got the jeans, the nice denim jeans. You've got the blue and white check shirt rolled up just below elbow, like nice shirt.
Regular occurrence. It's almost like a uniform.
No, that's true. I'm just painting the picture for the listeners. And then you've got the puffer vest, the RSN, of course, puffer vest. And then the cap, the black cap with some wispy bits hanging out the bottom. You look like you've been hanging out in at Leneva Park with a shark or Rosemont Stud with Mytho, just inspecting the yearlings. That is yearling attire 101.
It is a bit, isn't it? I'd love to be one of those people.
I think I would too, just by the way.
You'd have the guide sort of rolled up in the back pocket, the catalogue.
The catalogue.
A couple of brochures.
All these notes you'd have to make on the catalogue, though.
You have the Spirax sort of exercise book just marking down things.
Well, these days you get the Remarkable.
Do you want to talk about the Remarkable?
My digital notebook. My goodness. It's going to transform my life. It's one of the greatest things in the history of the world. The Remarkable.
Can you explain what the Remarkable is, before I explain why I'm dressed like this?
It's a digital notebook. Like, you know, because you're a notebookman and I'm a notebookman.
I like to write. You like to write. Because we've got excellent handwriting.
Well, that's true. That is true. And that should be celebrated and extended to the world. So I like to write. I don't like to have this laptop sort of typing stuff. It's not really for me. I don't like it. So I like to write. I like to have a pen in my hand or a writing implement and like to write. So this thing that Becca got me for Father's Day, it's the best. It's basically a digital notebook and you can import all your PDFs and write on top of them.
It's a good Father's Day present.
Well, I don't get much around the house. So it's sort of it's almost Christmas and Father's Day put together, really. It's the best. You put all your files in, massive storage, and you'll never have to need 15,000 notebooks. And I've seen you carry thousands of books, and I've got thousands of notebooks at home somewhere, but I always lose them. I don't know which one's which, because you always buy the five pack and it's the same.
My kids steal mine.
So this thing, it's transformed my life. Yeah, it's so good.
I'm investigating it.
I think you should get
one. I'm just impressed you got that for Father's Day. I got chocolate for Father's Day and then got criticised for being fat. So why'd you give me chocolate for?
You're going to say something else then, weren't you? I don't get much at home. There's not a lot of money spent on me. So I got a bit of a splurge on that one, which was nice. But it's revolutionised my world. Why are you dressed as a yearling inspector?
Well, I told you this the other day. I've just got no clothes to wear. None. It's a combination of none fitting, or I've got paint on a lot of the other things. So I've just got so few things to wear. And now the hair is a major issue. It's got really back into sort of sheep territory. And there's no chance of any haircut for the next 6 weeks. So I'm in crisis.
Could you cut your own? Would you trust Em to cut your hair?
Well, maybe just around the edges. She's done it before. But I'm wearing a hat to try and flatten the hair down. Now the hair's coming out the side like I'm Doc Brown on Back to the Future.
It's not that bad.
Well, it's getting that way. It's getting that colour too, which is even more concerning.
It's not that bad.
So, no, I'm in a bad way.
When you get up,
you go, geez, what am I actually going to wear today? That's what I'm at. That's where I'm at.
Well, I think in this industry, around these parts, like if at RSN Towers, where there's a racing theme, clearly, you're looking the goods. You've come in looking sharp today.
I'm not so sure. I'll tell you what, we sort of revolutionised radio yesterday with the footy song because it's just taken all before us. And if you want to put in a request, it's not too late. 1-300-652-927 or send us a text 0416 90 50 52. The amount of overwhelming sort of positivity coming through for the song choice and just the concept yesterday was exceptional.
Where was that displayed?
Just a variety of different places.
It wasn't my house.
Yesterday it was the Kudabeans. I wonder what it's going to be today.
Was it Kudabeans or was it just Champs? Are they claiming credit the whole Kudabean crew?
But it is part of the Kudabeans thing.
Well, I don't think it was. I don't think they get any cash when we play it. I think it's all Greg getting the cash when we play it.
It's Greg.
The APRA money goes to Greg, I think, not the good events.
Right. So anyway, that was yesterday, the thing I like about football, which is clearly the best song of all time when it comes to football.
He's a friend of mine now, but I coached him at St. Kevin's. He organised Greg Champion to come to the house. Sean will be listening out there somewhere too. I'd love to get Sean on the line. Give us a call, 1-300-652-927. And they got him to the house. And it was only a couple of years ago. Well, when I was coaching, it was a while now, I suppose. But they got him to the house to do a set.
Right.
And he was there rocking out. And they filmed it. And at one stage, loose Sean, a very loose dude, they're up on the roof and just hanging out and drinking cans and having a great time. Reckons it was one of the great afternoons of all time when Champs just came across and belted out all these number one hits.
Right.
And they'll never forget it. They keep talking about it.
There you go. I thought you were going to go down a different path because didn't you coach the bloke that does the Riptide song?
No, I missed him.
Oh, you missed him?
I missed him, Vance Joy.
Which is not his name.
Which is not his name. James Keogh is his name. He was sent off back at the Scobbers for the preceding couple of years before I got there. So I called him when I took over the position because apparently he was quite good. Big tall unit, centre half back. Mm. You need a centre half back. You need a pillar down back if you're going to build a plan. So I called him, and I'd clearly never met him before. It was a cold call. And I said, mate, just really keen to get you back in the system because there were some rumblings that he might not play anymore. Really keen to get you back in, you know, building some really cool things, yada, yada. And he goes, I'm probably just going to work on my music and see where that takes me. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, good luck to you playing the pub scene, mate, for $24. 2 years later, he's touring the world with Delta, with Taylor Swift, and he's got a number one hit around the world. He's dominating proceedings. So he probably made the right call in the end.
Yes.
But I would have liked to have him at centre-half back. I reckon we could have got him through that first final series.
Well, have you made him train twice a week to be selected?
Yes, my word. Just because you can play the ukulele doesn't mean you can skip training.
Yes.
No, Vance was... I miss Vance. Would have been handy that first couple of years, I reckon.
Yes, he would have been.
Straight sets for us.
It was interesting... I can't remember what I was going to talk about. So it can't have been that interesting. What was I going to say?
You were talking about your footy songs and you were doing...
No.
That is the single greatest piece of audio we've got.
Even by that time, I had no idea what I was going to say.
I do now. Already.
So I'm interested in this because I'm going to throw something at you. And again, you'll catch it. This is actually a good one for the SMS as well, 0416905052. So the Ryder Cup is this week at Whistling Straits.
It is.
Which is very exciting for those that love their golf. It's the pure battle of golf, and they didn't have it last year because of the pandemic, so it's been pushed back a year.
Yep.
Whistling Straits is where Jason Day won the PGA, and yes, also where Martin Keimer, God bless him, won the PGA as well. So it's going to be the third time there's been a big event there because it's a pretty spectacular sort of golf course. Anyway, Bryson DeChambeau is there, as is Brooks Koepka. Now, they hate each other.
They have a run.
So there's also Patrick Reed that's thrown into the mix as well.
Who no one likes.
Who no one seems to like, but he's really good at this sort of format.
At golf, yeah.
Yeah. But when it comes to Koepka and DeChambeau, the hatred is just... is very, very strong. So the question is whether it will actually affect the way that they play, as a team. Will it affect the team chemistry and all these sorts of things?
Right.
So the question I've got for you, and on the SMS as well, did you play with someone that you hated? Now, you're not really a hater. Or did you play or have had to coach a situation where you know that there are two people in your team that hate each other? Because the one that stands out to me is Andrew McLeod and Tyson Edwards.
Yeah.
That it got to a point where I think they reluctantly passed to each other.
Reluctantly?
Well, I think it got that bad that they weren't actually, be all out alone on the wing and they'll go the other option.
Go the one-on-one.
Go to a contest.
Go the short one-on-one.
But because it is quite... interesting to see how that plays out. Now, obviously, in Ryder Cup, it's not like they're going to be paired together. So it's not like they're actually going to be in action together.
Well, you wouldn't think.
But when it comes to a clubhouse situation or a team dinner or a, you know, like a pep talk, yeah, they're going to be in the same room. Did that ever happen to you? You don't have to give names, but where it was a, because teammates just get put together like a classroom where it's not like it's a group of friends necessarily.
I don't think so. I don't think even me not being involved, just other teammates and other teammates. I don't think it ever was that one of those situations where it was they couldn't stand to be with each other or really didn't like each other. I don't think it was ever that bad. There's always different personalities that didn't quite click, but not to the point where it was, no, I really can't stand this bloke, I hate this bloke. So I don't think so, and I don't think I've ever coached in that situation. I mean, the famous one from a Hawthorne perspective was Lee and Don didn't speak. Lee Matthews and Don Scott didn't speak very much at all back in the old Hawthorne days.
I didn't know it was that bad.
So the story went. Yeah, so that's
the best player and captain.
And captain. And probably the player of all time.
Yeah.
And captain. So they were different personalities, but apparently they didn't speak very much at all. Not if it was a hatred thing, they just didn't bother. But yeah, that's probably the one that stands out from my recollection of footy, apart from the Edwards and McLeod one. They're the two standouts.
Yeah, well, we won't, after the break, go through a few, because there's some coming through on the text already. Because in cricket, I can think of, there was obviously the famous one with Michael Clarke and Simon Kadich in recent times. And you can almost throw Michael Clarke in with a couple of others. The text is already coming about Steve Waugh and Mark Waugh. I don't think they didn't like each other. I think they were just very different people, but they were okay. They'd like to run each other out. But you'd throw in probably Steve Waugh and Shane Warne that became that way.
Well, while they were playing together?
Yep. Remember, because Steve Waugh left him out of that test match in the West Indies.
Oh, it's because he was being a goose.
And I don't think they really ever recovered from that. But I think cricket, particularly over the time, there's quite a few people that didn't like each other that had to play with each other because they'd have that state rivalry or, again, it's more of an individual game where the team result is the collective of individual performances. So jealousies come into play and whatnot. But, yeah, the football one, I didn't know about the Don Scott Lee Matthews one. But to me, the one that stands out was always the McLeod Edwards one.
Yeah.
Leighton Hewitt was kind of involved in all that somehow.
Yes, he was. He was. Yes. He was the net judge, just watching them go back and forth.
Mm.
Did Stephen Gary hocking off the SMS?
No, they don't. They don't talk.
They don't talk?
I don't know whether that happened when they were playing, but they don't have a close relationship.
Right. Well, keep them coming through. Now, it hasn't really affected my time in sport, I must admit. Certainly off the top of my head, anyway. And you'd think that sort of thing would be on the top of your head.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not for me. Not for me.
I think they've just taken it upon themselves that this is game weekend. And what we would normally do in a game week, what would you do? And they've reflected on that and just sort of carrying it out the same way. So no curfew as such, but I haven't seen too many guys coming in very late each night.
That's Chris Grant, the footy boss at the Western Bulldogs over there in Perth, getting ready for the grand final on Saturday night, talking about this supposed curfew that's been imposed. Not hasn't been imposed, Whitey. It's just they've decided they don't want to be out late in grand final week. Nothing to see here. Move along, says Chris, who, of course, will be presenting the Premiership Cup should the Bulldogs win on Saturday night.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of things, is that they want to be sensible in their build-up, but also I don't think that even though there is no COVID in Perth, touch wood, so we think, just to potentially put yourself in a scenario where you might be exposed to it, I think they're just trying to keep themselves as safe as possible, which is clearly sensible.
Makes a lot of sense, really, doesn't it?
Yep. And they're still pretty much in a bubble type scenario. So, yeah.
So Gary Lyon, of course, presenting the cup should the D's win. So they're both champions of the clubs, getting a chance to be a part of something very, very special on Saturday night in Perth.
I must confess, even just seeing those two together, it is a special grand final in the sense that neither club has had a lot of success. Now, clearly the Bulldogs won the Premiership in 2016, but in contemporary times, even if you want to go back sort of 20, 30 years, when you look at Melbourne and the Bulldogs, they haven't had a lot of success, even more, say, over the last 15, 20 years.
Yep.
They're not two teams that stand out as giants of the competition. And when you think of the success that, you know, really, even if you look back 20-odd years, we think of it being a really even competition. But Richmond's dominated, Geelong's dominated, Hawthorn's dominated. I'd put Sydney into the mix as well. West Coast, Brisbane, and to a very much lesser extent, Essendon. You know, going right back to the turn of the century.
Gee, you've had to stretch far.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's 20 years.
You've had to stretch a long way for the Bombers to be a force.
But do you know what I mean? Like, if you look at... Collingwood got one, but and they were very good
they
there
good
for quite some time.
4 or 5 years, yeah.
But the Bulldogs one's a bit of an anomaly. But again, with Sydney involved, there was still a team that had played in quite a few grand finals. This is a scenario, Bulldogs and Melbourne, where this is a bit of an outlier. I can't. There hasn't really been a random grand final like this, I reckon. There's always been one team that's been around the mark for a long time. This isn't the case. Like, you think of the Carlton-North Melbourne Grand Final in 1999, it was a bit of an outlier that Carlton was there. They'd won it in 95 and they'd been there in 93, but it was North Melbourne that was sort of the constant there through that period.
Yep.
Anyway, that's why I think this Grand Final is so unique, that there are two teams that are both, you know, quite new to the scene.
Yes, haven't had a lot of success at all.
No. A couple more text messages here. Yeah. One's come through for Chris Lynn and Ben Cutting. I think that was more after Cutting left that the animosity happened between Lynn and Cutting.
Players leaving animosity, goodness me.
Yeah. But that felt a bit fake, that.
Yeah, sounds a bit fake to me. If you're leaving a Big Bash team, come on.
That's right.
Let's be honest.
Warren Buchanan from the Baker.
Yes, well...
Beautiful friend, the Baker.
There's disdain there, really.
Keith Gregg and Ron Barassi, but they were, that was a coach and player situation.
So it was Buchanan and Warren.
Yes, yeah. Now, the other thing I wanted to mention, because I couldn't mention it to her yesterday, because Joey at the back and Craig, our producer extraordinaire, had not seen it.
Seen what?
SAS, the show that I'm obsessed with.
Oh, right, yes.
Did you see it?
No.
So... The boxing. They had boxing. Combat boxing.
Right. What's combat
boxing? It was
boxing?
Extraordinary. Well, it was boxing, but it was like sort of no rules boxing.
No rules?
Pretty much. Pretty brutal. Alicia Molik up against Yana Pittman. Now,
battle.
What would you set the odds there?
I think I'd be on the Alicia Molik side.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd have Pittman $1.04.
Who won?
Pittman. Pippen destroyed her.
Oh, Molik's a big unit.
Alicia actually put the number in.
Oh, come off it.
And she did.
She walked away off the show.
She did.
Oh, goodness.
She got brutalised by Yana. Now, Yana's an animal. You know, I'd be surprised if Yana Pittman doesn't win the whole thing.
She plays a lot of tennis, Alicia. A lot of tennis.
But Alicia Molik was pretty flat with her performance. She thought she thought she'd go all right.
Well, there you go. So did I.
She was taken to the cleaners. And then Mark Philippoussis, the gentle giant, had to go up against Pete Murray, the singer.
Oh, no, Pete wouldn't have lasted there.
No, Pete dislocated his elbow. But it was
what are they doing, these people?
I'm quite obsessed by it.
Well, clearly.
Yeah, because it's really interesting. Like, I can't believe that these people do it. Now, I know a lot of them are getting paid a lot of money to do it, but like Mark Philippoussis has really come out about this gentle giant that he hasn't got a lot of intensity about him. And, you know, we think of him as a player that we were quite critical of him, that he wasn't competitive enough. And he had his moments. He was involved in two incredible Davis Cup performances for Australia.
He was.
But for the ability he had, we felt that he wasted it through the time.
The French one was the best one, wasn't it?
I think it was on the clay. He also did it at Melbourne Park on the grass when they brought in the grass tennis court against Spain. But it's really interesting that these SAS guys, the way that they speak to them is amazing. But they identify the personality weaknesses or whatever. And it was really interesting, Mark Philippoussis talking about going out and buying all these cars and, you know, wasting all his money when he was there and he didn't really like it. And he kind of said that his career fell apart from injuries, when he couldn't get a clothing sponsorship. And he half cracked it and said, bugger this, and didn't want to play anymore.
Can't get a deal.
Yeah.
Can't get a free shirt,
it was
free
really
polo.
Quite bizarre.
I'm not going to play. It's an unusual way to dismount the scene, I reckon.
Now, and all I could think about watching Yana Pittman, and SMS has already come through on this, is Scotty Gullen in the background on the bed, just talking her through, just keeping her focused? That's all I could think about.
That is very funny off this mess. Well done.
Every time she's on the TV, I think, is Scotty in the background?
Just being a shoulder for her, just a voice of reason and calm.
Because you got into it a bit last series.
No, not SAS. I haven't watched it. I've watched a couple of, because Beck was sort of, she flicks a bit. So I've watched a couple of sort of 10-minute patches in the last series just because it was on and I was doing bugger all. But no, I'm not, I don't think I'm into it.
You would love it because I know you don't like reality television, and I don't.
Well, that's probably why.
I don't love it either, although I watch
it. Well, hang on a second.
I watch
your maths, bloody Big Brother, bloody SAS, Bachelor. You are, in fact, the aficionado of reality television.
No, it's on in the house.
You know a lot about it.
But it is remarkable. It truly is remarkable television what they do. And how it's set up. It really is. I'm quite intrigued by it.
There's some genuine concern about your honesty today off the SMS. You don't like reality television, you say, when you watch every show on the planet. And then you're claiming the powerhouse of a team that hasn't won a final in 5,342 days. There's some real concern about your honesty with our audience off the SMS. Give us a spell, someone says, Whitey. Funny stuff.
Those that don't judge SAS if you think it is a reality television show, which it kind of is. but seriously, if you're cynical about it, you should watch it. It is really, really interesting.
Righto. And now there's some news going around in the world of sport that we need to get into today. The Matildas have been in action against Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, and they've gone down 3-2. Now, why that's probably more pressing than anything else. Sam Kerr's 100th game in national colours, the skipper. Her 100th game didn't go to plan. But Mary Fowler, who's this young teenage sensation that's come on a couple of times in the Olympics, was it, recently? And played it last year or last 18 months and has massive things tipped of her. She scored twice in the first half. Now, it wasn't enough in the end for the team to win, so a bit of a setback for the team. But she's a name. We talk about Sam Kerr a lot, clearly, because she's pretty special in the world of women's soccer. But this Mary Fowler, there'll be more spoken about her in the coming years too, Whitey, because she might just be one out of the box, young Mary. Twice in the first half she scored, a brace as they call it, but not good enough this morning for the Matildas, who are in action against Ireland. And in the women's cricket yesterday, did you see any of that action up there in
Queensland? Yeah, I watched bits and pieces of it, yep.
The Aussie girls continued their recent domination of one-day cricket, 25 on the bounce. For the Australians, they dominated India. Although I have some concerns. I'm concerned about Elisa's bowling.
Mm.
She had the new ball yesterday and had it moving in fairness, but had zero control early doors, and she didn't look to be in great bowling form. She hasn't bowled a lot since the World Cup last year when she did her hamstring or whatever that was. So I know there's been a bit of a void time of bowling, but she didn't look in rhythm yesterday.
No, I had a couple of people comment that to me yesterday. And if you think about what she's gone through over the last couple of years, she's had a lot of injuries.
Yep.
And then they just haven't played a lot of cricket for a while either. So I think there are sort of, there's a bit of an alibi as to why she hasn't, well, she was poor yesterday. But is she becoming more a batsman than a bowler anyway?
Well, this
I reckon she's going that path a bit.
This is what I think too. I think time. Well, she's clearly got enough to be a really prominent bowler as well. But I think her batting has taken leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
To quote an SMS that somebody wants that song off the for the
has
footy
been
one.
Taken on board, by the way.
I think her batting's much more important to the team. Although when you look at our batting lineup, like it's the world's strongest batting lineup. They won down yesterday. Chase 225 yesterday. They won down. Rachel Haynes 93 not out. Healy does her thing 77 off 77. And Meg Lanning comes in and just guides them around for 53 off 69. Like the batting lineup of Australia is the top five is bordering on ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. And it was funny with Alyssa Healy. She got 77 off 77, and she wears 77. I think the
and
thing...
And you guys would love that on your energy.
Yeah, that's right.
On the bounce.
Rachel Haynes, because she had been sort of down at six with Villani opening the batting, so I think that's actually quite important for her that she got runs at the top of the order. But you're right. I mean, Perry didn't bat. Gardner didn't bat. There's a couple of others in there that you clearly can hold the bat as well. But yeah, I think with Perry, it was interesting. A friend of mine texted me and said, is Perry a victim of a little bit of what's happening in AFLW, where she was a dominant player, but as the new players have come through, is she not as good because the next line of players have got different development and are better? And I don't think that's necessarily the case.
Yeah,
certainly the case in football.
I think there's been enough time off the scene for this to be a building back up.
Yes,
project.
I agree. But Darcy Brown, we're actually going to speak to Darcy tomorrow morning. She took four for on debut.
She did,
which is the youngest to take four wickets on debut for Australia. But the thing that's really impressive about Darcy Brown is that she bowls pretty quick. And there's her and Taylor Vilmenic, which I always get her name wrong. I try to say it really quickly. But both of those are this new breed of fast bowler that actually bowl with a fair bit of ball speed, certainly comparatively to the women's game. And I've said this so many times, this is so important for the development of the game. Because we saw again yesterday with the Australians, the Indians can't get them out because they can't penetrate enough with the ball. And this is the problem with women playing test matches. Again, they can't get them out. As soon as the ball gets a bit soft, it's just like playing with a tennis ball for a lot of the good Australian batsmen and some of the good batsmen batters from other countries. So I reckon that is absolutely the important progression of the women's game is bowling quicker, and we've seen that with Darcy.
The Super Netball, is this a official trade period? It's just an uncontracted window where teams are going berserk because I've never come across more news in Super Netball. Is this the first time we've really seen extensive player movement to this degree?
It's not probably the first time we've seen heaps of movement, but certainly this is the most I remember seeing. What's happened is that a new CBA has just been signed and agreed upon, and it meant that every single player in the competition was off contract at the end of this season. So it, I guess, just allowed everyone to reassess their list from a team perspective, but also for the players. It was really just an opportunity for them to have a look at their different opportunities. And one of the big ones that came out of yesterday was Kira Austin, who is a young up-and-coming Diamonds player, unfortunately injured her knee at the beginning of this season, but she's just been signed by the Melbourne Vixens, our crew, which is very exciting. To have her come across and really strengthen that goal shooting circle. And I think that was an area that we needed to look at from a Vixen's perspective. So it's very exciting that Kira was open to some new challenges and coming down to Melbourne Town.
So why would she do that? She's left a premiership team for a wooden spooner.
Well, she wasn't quite, didn't quite get the premiership, but she came from the Giants.
Oh, sorry, the Giants. Final team.
Yeah, so they were certainly pushing, that's for sure. This year, they had a great season, as you say, grand final team. It's a good question. I think for Kira, she just felt like the time was right for her to have a new challenge. And what happened in the Giants circle this year was that a young goal attack, Sophie Dwyer, her name was, she came on and absolutely shot the lights out and played really well. As you said, took the team to a grand final, and potentially that played a role in that it's really difficult to fit three really talented goalers into one circle and one team. And I don't know if it was that, because I think Kira is still, you know, she's a Diamond squad member, so she's doing extremely well.
Yep.
But, yeah, she felt the time was right.
So all I could think about was, through this period, where's Caitlin Bassett? She's nowhere still.
Well, No, she's nowhere still.
It's extraordinary.
It's an interesting. It is extraordinary, and I know that we have spoken about this before. In that there's unlimited imports allowed in SSN, and what tends to happen is that the teams look for really key position players, and one of the real key position players on a netball court is the goal shooter position, and I think we spoke about this the other week. Only one team in the SSN has an Australian goal shooter in that position, and all the rest are taken up by internationals. And again, I'll reiterate, I think it is going to be one of the challenges for the Diamonds when they head into that international series. They're lucky they've still got a lot of talented goalers playing, just not a lot getting heaps of game time in the goal shooter position.
I mean, does that mean that's it for Caitlin, that she can't, A, get back in the Australian team where she was captain, and that if she can't get a game in the domestic competition, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I've failed to comprehend that.
It's hard to get your head around, isn't it? And she obviously played over in New Zealand last year because she was unable to secure a contract at the right time. The contracting periods didn't quite line up, but so she went over to New Zealand to play and decided that wasn't for her, so she's come home to Australia. And yeah, and I know that she's still exploring her options in terms of getting a contract, but it's there's less and less options becoming available now. A lot of the teams are getting really close to signing their full list. So yeah, I don't know the answer to what's next for Caitlin. She's just had knee surgery, so she'll be working through that. But it does, for mine, from a distance, look hard to be playing for the Diamonds if you're not playing netball.
Well, I did a little bit of reading the other day and came across a story about Caitlin, because I'm a bit like you, Whitey, intrigued by the whole scenario where the Australian captain can't get a game at a club. It's unusual. When you say it out loud,
that's what I mean.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's like,
there is a comparison.
Well, it's like Steve Smith not getting a game for New South Wales.
Or any other Sheffield Shield.
Or any other team, yeah. Like, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous, the whole concept. But I was reading the other day, Smack, as I got sidetracked, that she's also looking internationally in even the English Super League, where Lisa Alexander is at the London Pulse, which leads me to the Lisa Alexander conversation I wanted to have with you, because we haven't had this. Why is she going over to London to be an assistant coach in one of their teams?
Yeah, Lisa's obviously, I mean, she's been talking a bit about what her next role will be, and that's been whether she'll coach an AFL team and all sorts of different things, Lisa. So
she's going to do an Alistair Clarkson. She's going to have a year out of it, year out.
Yeah, well, and I mean, she's had that. That's the point. She has had that. She's had that time away from netball after she left the Diamonds role. This is more a coaching director role over there.
Right.
So it's an overseeing role. So I think for her, you know, some of her family are over in England. She was always just been really open to having different experiences, Lisa, and loves to travel and loves to expand things. So she's not the first Australian coach to do that sort of thing. Quite a few others have been over to coach in that realm. And by all reports, she's really excited about it.
Well, that's good. That'd be good for them to have a person of her calibre, of netball IQ, acumen, so to speak, over there leading the charge for the London Pulse. Now, is that a good competition, the English Super League?
Yeah, it is. It's a really strong competition. A lot of the England, well, I say a lot, quite a few of the English players are over here playing in Australia. So they don't have all their top players, but they do have a lot of their top players. And England are doing some really good things on the international stage. They're current Commonwealth Games gold medalists. So doing some really good things. And yeah, it is really strong. And having Lisa over there will absolutely give that a boost. There's no question about that.
Righto. So that's what's happening with Lisa. And Caitlin Basson can't get a game. Kira Austin's coming to the Vixens. Is there any other big moves? Who's the other biggest move in Super Netball in the last couple of weeks who signed on for a new team? Any dramatic sort of unexpected announcements?
Another goaler, Sophie Garvin, left the Swifts, who were the eventual premiership winners, and she's coming down to Melbourne as well to play for the Magpies. That was quite a big one, but a needed one, because she wasn't getting enough court time. Is there any others off the top of my head? I don't think so. There is a lot of movement, but I think largely, you know, there's been a few announcements to say that some players aren't re-signing for their current team, but we haven't heard where they're going yet. So there's still some interesting things to play out.
The Melbourne Storm, clearly one of the greatest institutions in the history of sport in this country, but they've got a preliminary final to build up to this weekend, Smack and Whitey, against the Penrith Panthers, which we're very much looking forward to Saturday at 4 p.m. But yesterday made a significant announcement to their loyal members. Justin Rodsky is the CEO of the Melbourne Storm these days, and he joins us on the line. Good morning, Justin.
Morning, Half. Whitey, Cheryl, good to be with you.
Great to be with you this morning. Now, it's prelim final week. You've been involved in the AFL realm for many, many years. Is it as big in the NRL prelim final week as it is in the AFL?
Yeah, absolutely it is. I mean, I'm now up in Queensland, obviously, did my 2 weeks quarantine about a week ago. I got out, and it's really exciting to be here, and obviously being in an NRL state, if you like, in terms of the heartland. And they've got two preliminary finals coming up at Suncorp Stadium this weekend. So, yeah, no, it's definitely just as big.
All right. Well, speaking of big, I'll get back to that game shortly. Speaking of big, you made a big, in fact, a massive announcement yesterday for the supporters of the Melbourne Storm. You just want to go over that again for us?
Yeah, well, after 2 years of doing it really tough in Melbourne and, you know, experiencing lockdown after lockdown, as well as their team, the Melbourne Storm, being relocated out of Melbourne for 2 years in a row and only being able to see 5 games in 2 years, including missing 2 final series that they would have been able to attend at Amy Park. We sat down and had to think about how we could say thank you and give back to our members. And in the end, we wanted to do something really big and impactful and something really genuine. And it's a credit to Matt Tripp and our board and the executive team. And we've backed this in to say thank you. We're giving all of our members in season 2022 a free membership, and we hope that they know how much we appreciate their incredible work over the last 2 years, and this is our way of saying thank you.
So 23,000 members the Storm has, and you are going to give them free memberships for the 2022 season because they've missed out in the last couple of years.
Yes, that's correct.
How does that work financially? How can you afford to do that? Bottom line stuff, because I'm just thinking from a any organisation that relies on membership or a large chunk of membership revenue for operations day to day, how can you do that?
Yeah, it's a significant investment by the club. You know, every year we look at ways and opportunities to drive incremental revenue into our club and into our business. And, you know, this year is going to be no different, except the gap toward budgets is going to be a little bit bigger for us. And that's something that we wanted to do. We're taking on a significant financial hit as a result of it, but we feel it's important and we feel it's an investment in our future. We're hoping that this initiative can propel us in terms of our membership growth over the coming years. And as we head towards our 25th year anniversary in 2023, you know, we'd like to think that not only will we be leading the NRL in terms of club membership, hopefully we're knocking on the door of some of the AFL clubs as well.
Yeah, and it's a great target to have, Justin. You talk about the heartland of the NRL up in Queensland and across New South Wales. How difficult has it been for the club, given the last couple of years, and trying to keep members and the interest down here in Melbourne and keeping people engaged in what you're doing?
Yeah, it's been challenging. You know, people love coming to Amy Park and love attending games. They love going to family days. They love attending events, and that's Melburnians, really, isn't it? So we've done everything we can across our digital channels and social media, and working as closely as we can with the players to connect with, with our members in Melbourne. And, you know, thankfully, we've had really strong broadcast numbers that have enabled our fans and members to see our games. Over 20 million people have watched the Melbourne Storm this year across Channel 9 and Foxtel. So we've been able to continue to perform on the field, and that we know that that's been providing a positive for people as they're in lockdown. So we've just done everything we can to connect in any way we can across social and digital media, I think our members have really appreciated that.
So, Justin, for those that are, I guess, eligible for this free membership, is it for anyone, or is it for those that had memberships for this year and or last year? How does it actually work?
Yeah, so any member from 2020 and 2021 who had match day access is eligible for a free membership, and they'll be receiving an email in the next 24, 48 hours to redeem that. So that's about 23,000 across the 2 years.
Geez, you're going to be putting a lot of pressure on AFL clubs now with this. This is, it's incredibly significant.
Yeah, well, it is. But, you know, I look at it and I think this is a Melbourne Storm thing to do. You know, this is something that is important to us. We wanted to make sure our members know how important they are to the club and to our future. And we see it as an investment in that. And we just hope that we can, you know, use this platform, as I mentioned, to grow our membership, you know, continue to engage our fans and our members, get more and more people to our games next year. And we know that, you know, once you come to Amy Park and experience the Melbourne Storm game, and you're coming back again the next week. It's something that is really special. It's a great stadium, great atmosphere. And, you know, I think, obviously, Melbourne's very AFL-dominated and we're in a big AFL market. And, you know, people just need to sometimes take a look across the road to Amy Park and, you know, come and experience an NRL game because it's great.
What about this? It's the AFL Grand Final. We know that Melbourne and the Bulldogs, Melbourne looking to break a premiership drought, second only to the Saints, I think it is, at the moment. Lots of work to do, but a great opportunity on Saturday night at Optus Stadium. I wonder what one of their former greats is thinking about all of this. He played 252 games for the team of the Red and the Blue, 41 goals. He coached them for 44 games, coached North Melbourne for 44 games as well. Was a five-time VFL Premiership player with the Ds through the late 50s and early 60s. Member of the Australian Football Hall of Fame and All-Australian Melbourne Team of the Century on the wing. It's the one and only Brian Dixon who joins us on the Breakfast Club. Brian, good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
Great to have you with us on the program. A lot to look forward to talking to you about.
Well, it's a very exciting time.
Oh, well, that's the first place I want to start. I mean, how do you feel about all this? You played in the last premiership in 1964. I bet you didn't think that was going to be the case 57 years later.
That's absolutely right. Now, I would have expected Melbourne to have done better than that over all the years. So it's a tragedy for Melbourne supporters, but hopefully all will be well after Saturday.
Yes. Are you bullish about the prospects?
Yes, I think Melbourne have done extremely well this year, and there's absolutely no reason why they shouldn't carry off the premiership.
Do you sit there when you're watching this edition of the Ds, Brian, and compare them to what you had in your halcyon days with that unbelievable era for the Melbourne Footy Club, the team that existed then?
Well, it's hard to compare a team that has yet to win a premiership between the 57 years with the fact that we were fortunate to win six premierships, of which I participated in five.
Now, that's a fair point, I suppose. That's a fair point.
That is very true. And, Brian, when you think about the history that goes behind the MCC and the Melbourne Cricket Ground and wanting to be there and watching your team, what's it like for one of the legends of the club watching this happen but not actually being able to be there and living it?
Well, I guess I can't answer that question until I actually do it. But I'm barracking like mad that Melbourne will win. I believe that Melbourne will win, so I don't want to think about the alternative.
No, exactly. And when you look at the team at the moment, they've got so many stars right across the ground. Is there someone that you're drawn to? Is there someone that you look out there and think, that's my sort of player?
Well, I think the captain is earned his way, and he's played magnificently well, and I think that will continue on Saturday.
So, Brian, just an extension to that question, playing through such a successful era in Melbourne, is there a player that plays the same way as some of the stars that you played with, that might be a Petrarca or a Lever that reminds you of some of your star players?
Oh, I think that's a difficult question to answer. I mean, I knew intimately my teammates and the way they played, and so I guess I wouldn't dare to equate the performances of the current players with the team in which I was lucky enough to play. So, but I think the captain has had a wonderful season, and I expect him to do well in the ruck, and I'm hopeful that will lead the way for Melbourne to win the premiership.
Now, Brian, you mentioned before you played in 5 premierships for Melbourne. Why didn't you play in 6?
Well, I was playing for Melbourne University Commerce Faculty against dentistry in the grand final of the university football competition, and with all the faculties that were involved, and I was told not to play by the coach, Norm Smith, and so I left my football gear at home at Nulla Wadding. I lived at Nulla Wadding in those years with my mother. And anyway, a fellow called Rex Thompson, who was a mate of mine, had a car, which was unusual in those days. He said, "Dicko, we need you. I'll drive you home in my car, pick up your gear and play. No one will ever know." So I passed for that. And I got driven home by Rex Thompson to Nulla Wadding, picked up my gear, played, and we were fortunate to win the inter-faculty premiership. And next morning in the paper was that Dixon led the Commerce Faculty to the premiership. So Norm Smith came to me and said, "Is this you?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, you're out." And that's what happened to me. I got dropped.
Oh, no.
So, no, I know times were different back then.
Somebody in the background is laughing. But I think it was funny.
Well, it's unusual is that while we're laughing, Brian. It's a very unusual situation. I know things were different back then, but an inter-faculty game took precedent over an AFL, a VFL grand final.
That's right. Well, there was about 20 faculties at Melbourne University all playing off for the premiership. And Mick Aylett was a member of the dentistry's team. And Rex Thompson said, "Dicko, if you don't play, Aylett will dominate the game and we'll lose. And we've spent all this time trying to win the faculty premiership." So I fell for that and got the gear and played.
Have you forgiven Rex Thompson yet for making you do that?
No. Brian, can I wind you back even further than that? You've got a storied history, of course, at the Melbourne Football Club, but you were a Saints supporter when you were growing up, so much so. Is it true that you moved to your grandmother's house so that you could be zoned to the Saints? But then what happened there with those conversations?
Well, what happened was that I went and trained for St Kilda in their training, and they said, "Well, don't bother shifting your address from Wright Street, Paran to St Kilda, because we're not interested in you." So I then got an invitation from Jim Cardwell at Melbourne to train with the Melbourne team, and I took that invitation up and haven't regretted it ever since.
No, exactly right. So you mentioned Norm Smith, obviously Ron Barassi, some famous names that were part of that successful era at Melbourne. What was it like to be part of the town, part of that club that was so dominant through those times?
Oh, it was a wonderful experience. We were looked up to from the football world, and the people who were associated, like Norm Smith and Jim Cardwell and Checky Hughes, and I could go on and on with the members of the committee, and I thoroughly enjoyed my time with the Melbourne Football Club. It was fantastic.
A bit of basketball news, but it's not just basketball news. I think this is going to be a conversation that a lot of sporting administrators are going to have and deal with from a playing perspective in the next little while. It's the vaccination conversation. The New Zealand Breakers had to part company with Ty Webster the other day. It was a mutual parting of ways, says the announcement. I'm keen to find out more about it because Ty decided that he didn't want to be vaccinated, as is his right. Matt Walsh is the CEO of the New Zealand Breakers, who joins us to talk about that. Hello, Matt.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me, guys.
Good on you. Great to have you with us. This is a really interesting conversation from my perspective because you guys are the first ones from in the, sort of the local scene, the Trans-Tasman scene, to have an athlete affected by their decision to not want to be vaccinated for the COVID virus. And now you've mutually parted ways. How do we get to this point, Matt? Tell us your story, your angle on this story.
Yeah, sure. So, while the news came out last week, this is something that wasn't a big surprise or shock for us. We've been working with all of our players in Thai since the end of the season in early June on a plan to get vaccinated. If their plan was to get vaccinated, we supplied all the guys with our team doctor's information so they could reach out and get all the information they needed. At the end of the day, we got to a point where we're in mid-September. Thai gave us a final answer that he had zero plans to get vaccinated. And then we had an open and honest conversation, and all indications are that there's going to be very limited travel for people who elect not to get the vaccination. There's also going to be limits on entering sporting venues, certainly interstate travel in Australia, and definitely the Trans-Tasman bubble. So for us, when we talked through all those things, the fact that Ty had absolutely no plans to get vaccinated, we spoke with Ty, we spoke with his representatives, and it became clear what's best for both sides is to part ways.
So is that, he's losing his job effectively because he won't get vaccinated or doesn't want to get vaccinated, as I said before, which is his right to do so. What happens from there? Do you have to pay him out? How does it work? Because is he in breach of contract? How does it work from your end?
No, the conversation was very much how I just put it. It was from his perspective, he's electing not to get vaccinated because he thinks that's what's best for him. Totally fair enough. I don't believe it's my job as an employer to tell someone you have to get vaccinated. I'll leave that to the government or the league. And from our perspective, he couldn't travel. So it wasn't, hey, you no longer have a job. It was he wants to pursue his basketball career somewhere else. Where he'll be able to do that without being vaccinated, I'm not sure. I don't know that there's any major league in the world that he can.
Yeah.
So it was just a parting of ways. There was no payout. There was no, he's not going to be able to provide services for us. He wants to do that elsewhere. And it was just a mutual decision. It was, I know when you break up, it's very rarely truly a mutual decision. This really was. This was what's best for both sides.
I'm sure it was really tough for the club because you had such a great season last year, signed a two-year deal in July. And I think it is a really important distinction to make, Matt, that this was not a mandate from either the league or the club that you have to get vaccinated to participate. It is just the fact that he won't be able to perform the duties required of this role because he won't be able to travel. And I think that when we look at this, we try and take the emotion out of it. That is just the reality of the world we live in at the moment.
That's exactly right. And that's what that's why the conversations were so clear and it became clear what direction we were headed because, while there hasn't been a mandate yet, all the premiers in Australia, all the indications that we're hearing in terms of the Trans-Tasman bubble are that there's just going to be no travel for people who are unvaccinated. So this definitely wasn't the club mandating everyone else had to get vaccinated. And I will say that all of our other players and staff are vaccinated. But, this was Ty's choice. And, I've said it a number of times. As an athlete, sometimes you have to make hard choices that you feel like are best for yourself and your family. And Ty felt that. And then, you live with the consequences. The consequences for the club are, unfortunately, we're going to miss a really good player. And the consequences for Ty are, he can't play in the NBL for at least the next 2 years because that's the duration of the remaining of his contract. And I don't know that there's other places. I know he can't go play in most places in Europe either. So, we wish Ty the best. We remain open to him returning if things change. But, at this point, I think that's very unlikely.
Yeah, and the season is about to kick off not that far away, actually, November 18. It'll come rushing at us. It does sound like the season will get underway in Australia. Is that what you're planning towards?
Yeah, certainly. As optimistic as we have been this off-season, given the current climate of COVID, there's no chance that the Trans-Tasman bubble will be open then. So we're preparing and working with the league to get a home over in Australia for at least the first month or two of the season. And we're, crossing our fingers that at some point we'll be able to return home and we won't go through what we did last year, which was, 5.5 months in Australia and 9 different moves.
Today, we go back to a very famous day in the history of the Western Bulldogs, the 2016 Grand Final against the Sydney Swans. The drought breaker for them. The Demons are trying to do it on Saturday night, but Dale Morris lived that moment for the Western Bulldogs in 2016, and I'm sure he's very, very keen to relive it with us. And they've built up to their very own chance to win another one this Saturday night. Moz, good morning.
How are you, mate?
Mate, I am very, very well. How are you in Grand Final week?
Oh, it's exciting, isn't it? I know it's interstate and it's over in Perth and we can't be there, but you know what? A grand final is a grand final and a premiership is still a premiership. So I'm really excited and looking forward to what's going to be a big game.
Now, you're still involved in the club these days around the traps. What's the vibe like when the staff aren't able to be a part of it because, as you said, it's clearly in Perth. What's the vibe like? Is there a real positive energy even though you're not really together?
Oh, definitely, definitely. The club's been great in connecting the footy department and the footy admin department through Zooms, through videos, through messages. We're sending a lot of messages and support to the players. The players, you can see they're getting it and you can tell they're getting it. And there is a genuine excitement and buzz within the footy club and outside the footy club. I get to deal with player sponsors and top dog members and all the members. They call up and even though they're here in Vic and lockdown, they are genuinely excited about the grand final.
Does it take you back this week? Your memories flood back to 2016 and the pathway for the Bulldogs in that year to achieve that magnificent success on grand final day?
Oh, it certainly does. Nothing beats playing in a grand final. And I remember the build-up. Each week, the momentum building, the people jumping on board and supporting the club. And you can feel the same thing happening. Although it is interstate, you can still feel the momentum building, the excitement generating. I'm driving into the club today to do a little bit of work, and I can't wait to drive around and see the houses and the fences painted red, white and blue, because that's what made it so special in 16.
That's I've been loving watching and seeing all the decorations right across the town. It is fantastic. And the Bulldogs, you know, there may be some similarities, but it has been a hard road for them, hasn't it? They've been jumping around the country to get themselves to this grand final. What effect do you think that will have?
Well, it's a funny one. You could look at that and the amount of travel the players have had to do in this final series. You could say, geez, that would wear them down. That would make it harder. But I think it's actually brought them together. The challenges that they've come across with the travel, and then on top of that, you come up against Port Adelaide in Adelaide, and even the state government were against us. And I think it's actually bringing the group and the team even closer together. We've got a young group, so being away from home is difficult, but not a lot of them have kids, partners and wives that could really, you know, make that even harder than what it is. So having a young group, they're away together, they're enjoying each other's company, we're winning games of footy and we're playing in a grand final, so they're going to be up and about more than anyone.
Are you surprised at the resilience, though? Because I know you say they're enjoying the company, but it's a tough way to get to the grand final. Is it something that has surprised you about this group, or is it just a feature of the club? I mean, you did it in the same way in 2016. Is there something about that backs to the wall sort of thing that works for this club?
Yeah, I think so. The backs to the wall, maybe the underdog sort of tag, which was in 2016, really worked for us then. It's working for us again this time around. But with all the travel, definitely would make it harder, would make it a lot more difficult. But they're surrounded by great coaches, great support staff that are helping them through that. And everyone's going to have their moment where they're like, you know, this sucks. You know, we're traveling all the time. How good would it be to be in Melbourne in my bed, at home with my family? But when they have those moments, they're surrounded by some great people at the footy club that are helping them through those moments.
Sherelle has been listening in the last couple of days, Whitey, as she always does, because she loves the program. Not only is a big part of it. And she's been noticing that you've introduced a new opportunity through Grand Final Week in particular.
Footy songs.
A footy song. And my understanding, Sherelle, is that you would like to get involved in these shenanigans. Is that correct?
It is. It's correct. Particularly, I was listening this morning and, you know, there's been a lot of big songs, ballad-type songs, emotion-evoking. This is not quite that, but this has been a favourite song that goes on repeat in our household. It's a bit of an earworm. Here it is.
I don't know what to think about this, Sherelle.
This is it's so much fun. I love this song, and we sang it and we still go, he's coming to get you. Every time we see Anthony McDonald, Tim Woody, it's just, this is fun. Come on, this is great.
Well, the problem is Essendon don't really play in finals very well.
No, that's true.
I know. That's what I was like when we were talking in the break. It's not really a grand final song.
No, but it's a footy.
But anyway.
We haven't played a grand final song yet.
No, just a footy song.
Just footy songs. Yesterday was a footy song. Today was
I
a
had
footy
no
song.
Idea what it was initially, but now I do know what it is.
Anthony McDonald, Tim and Woody playing footy.
Is this up there or... Are you offended by me?
I'm certainly not offended. I'm not offended by any of those songs, you know.
I'm a little bit offended.
Yeah.
I must admit.
I wasn't sure how you'd take it, actually. Well, but anyway, that's a bit of fun.
What does Anthony McDonald Tip and Woody do, Sherelle? What does he do?
He's coming to get you. Anthony McDonald Tip and Woody playing footy. Look, it's not quite Greg Champion, not quite Mike Brady, yeah,
okay.
It's modern contemporary, and this is what you bring to the program, Sherelle, and we appreciate that.
We certainly don't.
We don't live in those spots.
We're middle-aged men.
Oh, goodness me, and that's stretching it too, just by the way. That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.